Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hello, and welcome to Success Is Podcast, where we explore the diverse paths to success and the powerful stories of those who inspire us. I'm your host, Phil Portman, and today's episode is a deeply moving journey into courage, purpose, and the strength to rise above life's most unimaginable trials. Our guest today is a man whose life reflects both remarkable achievements and profound resilience. Stephen Panis has worn many hats: publicist, sports agent, artists, attorney, author, sports marketing executive, and motivational speaker. He's worked with some of the biggest names in sports, from NFL Pro Bowl stars and Super Bowl champions to Indianapolis 500 winners and international tennis greats. But his story goes far beyond professional success. It's one shaped by love, loss, and an unshakable determination to find light in the darkest moments. Stephen's debut book, Walk On, is a testament to that journey. Written in the wake of losing his 16-year-old son, it's a deeply personal exploration of grief, hope, and the will to keep moving forward. The book has touched countless readers, earning praise as a Good Morning America Book Club buzz pick and resonating for its raw honesty and uplifting spirit. Today, Stephen joins us to share his extraordinary story, how he navigated the pain of losing his son, how that experience redefined his understanding of success, and how he turned heartache into a source of inspiration for others. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. It's nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. And so what does success mean to you?
Good question. I think for me, success is being open to experience the wholeness of life and to make a positive impact on others.
Absolutely. And you're doing a lot of that right now through some of your works. And can you tell us a little bit about what you've been doing with the scholarship?
Yeah, so we have two scholarships in honor of my late son, Jake, and our late son. And one awards college scholarships to graduates from Red Cloud Indian School in South Dakota on Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. We've awarded three there. And the goal is to carry on Jake's legacy of lifting up others and spreading joy. And the second scholarship, they're both named the Walk-On Scholarship, is at the University of South Carolina, where Jake wanted to attend college. He was killed the summer before his junior year of high school. About a month before he died, he took his first practice SAT, scored a 1340. He was locked into his goal. It's where I went to college, so he was following in my footsteps. He was raised a Gamecock, and I felt a responsibility to make sure that Jake got there as his father. And so in partnership with Shane Beamer, the head football coach in the athletic department, we created a second scholarship, and it rewards a walk-on football player who exhibits the leadership qualities, the sense and care for his community, the grit, the grace, the toughness. And we've awarded four scholarships there in the last 4.5 years. So 7 total in 4.5 years. Both of them are endowed, will live forever. And it's very meaningful to me and my family to know that each one of these recipients carries a part of Jake in them now.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I had a chance to read your book, and I want to tell you, before I started the book, I was incredibly nervous. I was nervous that I wasn't going to be able to make it through your book. I have a son. He's 15 right now. He's learning how to drive. We're in the car with him while he's learning how to drive. And it's one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. And then I happen to be reading your book at the same time while this is going on. So it was very, very personal to me reading your book. But I got to say, the message was there's heartbreak to it, but it was very inspiring. And I was, it wasn't the type of book where you open it up and you're like, I can't write now anymore today. It was one that I wanted to read. I wanted to go through it because of the inspiration that I felt in it. And I just want to say tremendous job being able to do that, to be able to balance the grief and the tragedy with the inspiration in that book for the individuals and the people that are associated with it. But I'd like to hear a little bit about what inspired you to write Walk On, and how did that process help you heal?
Yeah. So thank you, first off, for the kind words, Phil. I didn't start out to write a book. I was blown away. When my son was killed, my life changed in a nanosecond, and everything changed in my wife and Jake's little brother, Liam. We were blown to smithereens. It felt like someone reached into my chest and ripped out my beating heart. And so we were in collective survival mode for months and years, honestly. And I first started writing a goodbye letter to Jake. I needed to put some emotion down on paper that needed to come out of me. It wasn't serving me to hold on to it. I was filled with a range of emotions, from sadness and profound grief and sorrow to anger and rage against our circumstances. And so I started to write a letter to Jake, figuring I could get some of this out on paper and in a healthy way. And then one day I looked at Liam, and I was 52 years old at the time. And I thought, man, I'm struggling. How is an 11-year-old boy supposed to process and cope with losing his beloved brother? And so I knew I had to do something for Liam. So I asked him to get his buck knife and meet me outside. And he did. And we walked across our property to an old mature tree. And I had Liam carve off a swath of bark off the tree. And he obliged. Then he looked at me and said, "Now what, Dad?" And I said, "Now we're going to watch this tree heal. And I'm not going to lie to you. It's going to look different. It's going to feel different. It's going to be different. It could be a different color of bark that regrows over this. But it's going to heal. It's going to find a way to cover up most of this scar." And that's exactly what we're going to do. And I needed him to believe in himself, but also me as his father, that we're going to do this together. We're going to find a way to walk on. And that was kind of a turning point. And then I had this tradition with my boys where I would write them. It started when Jake was five, and it's continued with Liam. And Jake used to read them to Liam. I would write morning messages on Post-it sticky notes. And those messages were included quotes from known and unknown personalities, and my own thoughts as well. And they focused on key values and characteristics and traits that I thought were important, many non-negotiable, that would serve my boys well in life. And I was trying to instill in them wisdom and compassion and kindness. In the wake of Jake dying, and anytime I think you lose a child suddenly like that, you are left questioning your belief systems, your values, your faith. Everything is in doubt. You don't trust anything anymore. And I looked at these quotes because I stumbled upon a few of the Post-it sticky notes in a old folder. And I thought, was this all bullshit? Where's the veracity in this? And I had to kind of sit and look at them and rediscover it. And in doing so, the writing evolved to the point where when I was done writing, I felt like, wow, this could really help Liam. And more importantly, it could help others. So I decided to find out, and I sent 40 letters out to publishers with a proposal and sharing what the book was about and whatnot. And I heard back from four that were interested, and which was a pleasant surprise. And I ended up publishing the book with Kohler Books out of Virginia Beach, Virginia. And as you mentioned, it's been accepted and received really well. And I've gotten immense feedback from it, knowing that it's helping other people. And importantly, Phil, it's helping people not just who have lost a child, right, or lost a loved one. Grief comes in many forms. You can lose your job. You could have a financial crisis happen. Your marriage could suffer and you may separate or even divorce. You could be diagnosed with a poor medical condition, or a family member could be. Your house could be burned down by a fire, or taken out by a tornado or an earthquake. There are so many forms of adversity that happen, and they all cause grief. And it's a universal concept. No one is immune from it. And so the book is really for everyone. And yeah, the first chapter is difficult because of what happened. I lost my son. It was the worst thing in the world. But beyond that, it was about sharing who Jake was. Like, people often ask me, hey, tell me how Jake died. And I'll be like, no, let me tell you how he lived. Because Jake was a magnetic personality. He just, if he walked into your studio right now, he would light it up like a spotlight. And if you didn't see him, you would feel him, because his energy was palpable and contagious and electric. And he just, you know, for only being 16 years old, he was wise beyond his years and really had this innate ability to lift people up. And he knew who needed it, who needed an ear, a hand, a hug, a kick in the butt. But he was always there, and he spread joy and just was, had a smile from ear to ear on his face. And so I'm like a vessel for carrying Jake's legacy forward, along with those scholarship recipients. And that's really kind of how the genesis of the book occurred.
Yeah. So what does it mean to you to be a vessel for Jake's message?
Well, when you lose a child, you don't just lose the child, you lose the future with that child. So I didn't get to see Jake graduate from high school. I'll never get to see him graduate from college or get married or have kids. He doesn't come back for holidays, right, from college. I've lost all those future moments. So the fact that his spirit remains so luminous and energetic and it's ever present is meaningful. And he comes through me when I speak. I've never been a public speaker. I've been the guy behind the camera. My clients were the ones in front of the camera. If I was doing my job right, and they were the one getting the print and the publicity. But when this happened and I awarded the first scholarship in September of 2021, I realized that I was being called to do this, and that it is Jake coming through me, because I don't know how I stood up and spoke that first time, because I could barely think. And yet when I went, I thought I was a complete mess. And when I was shown the tape afterwards, I couldn't believe how composed I looked. And I realized it was Jake behind me kind of holding me up. But his love and his light comes through me, and I'm just trying to share it and carry it forward. And because I don't have a future with him, my opportunities to go and speak to audiences all over this country and beyond allows me to take Jake to more places and allows him to shine upon more people. And that's all I got left. And that's meaningful to a bereaved parent.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it sounds like you'd connected in the book with a lot of other bereaved parents as well. Can you share a little bit about some of your stories, and has this book impacted some of them as well?
Yeah, I mean, sadly, we're a fraternity that nobody wants to join. But I did have dads reach out to me who had experienced the same, and someone had done that for them, and they felt obligated to pass it along. And it's caused me to do the same. I've written more letters than I care to ever write, and trying to help other parents, because I know exactly the pain and the anguish and the grief and the challenge that lies ahead of them when something like this happens. And it's just meaningful. Like, when people reached out, and these dads, you know, sometimes you don't even have to talk. We would just take walks on a beach, and it was just, we wouldn't say anything for 5 minutes. We'd just walk, and then someone would say something, and you could just pick up like it was yesterday. And some of these guys I had just met, days before. We spoke each other's language without saying stuff, which was weird. We thought the same things. We had the same questions. Someone, you know, if they had gone through it before, they had asked the same question, so they got it. And it was just nice to have a resource, because you're so lost when this happens. I was a zombie for a year. More than a year, just a zombie. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat, lost a ton of weight. You're so unmotivated, and you don't feel like you're part of life anymore or this world. Everything seems to be moving past you really fast. You don't understand just normal conversations. You hear people complaining about what I now look at as incredibly trivial things. And I'm like, get a real problem, right? I mean, that is so like details.
It's like, I wish I had that as a problem, right?
Yeah.
What you're thinking, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry your painter painted the kitchen wrong, right? It's like, come on.
Yeah.
It's fixable. Mine isn't.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what do you see as a universal lesson in your story?
That we all suffer. And no matter how it happens or when it happens, we all have to find a way to walk on. And often people look externally for those answers, whether that's buying something to make themselves feel better, experiencing an activity or whatever. But the reality is that the answers to overcome adversity reside within you, and you have to mine them. It's your resilience. It's your holding on to hope, right? I was helpless for a long time, but I was never hopeless. Tenacity, the grit and the grace, and finding gratitude in little things. So I think that, you know, as I said earlier, it's a suffering is something that happens to all of us. It's universal. It's indiscriminate. The degrees of suffering are different, certainly, but it's something we all encounter. I look at everyone now, Phil, as if they're carrying this invisible backpack, and in their backpack is their suffering. And by me seeing that, I'm able to connect with them more. I'm able to understand that they have a story and I need to listen to their story and also have compassion and kindness for them. And ultimately, that's why we're here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's oftentimes when you have a bad interaction with somebody, right? I'm sure you've probably done this, and you get a moment to just talk to them and find out what's going on. You hear this whole story.
Yeah.
And in that moment, you realize that this is another human suffering.
Yeah. I'll give you one where you don't even get a chance to get the story. What if you're driving and some guy cuts you off, you know, and honks and gives you the whatever, the bird and whatnot? I look at that now and I go, he or she must be in a hurry. Something must have happened, right? I just cut him the slack. I'm like, okay.
I'm laughing because my wife says something. She says, whenever she gets cut off or something like that, she goes, they probably got to poop really bad. They're looking to get home right now.
Exactly.
And she's like, you have no idea what's going on with them, you know?
Yeah, but just having the awareness to think that is huge. Instead of reacting, right? A lot of people just react to it, and it's just like, then it becomes this bad. All of a sudden, something that they did that had nothing to do with you other than they cut you off is now you've allowed it to overtake you and drain your energy.
Yeah, and made it personal about you when the fact is it had nothing to do with you, right?
Exactly.
That's right. That's great. So I'd like to hear a little bit about your public speaking, because you've been doing more of that since this occurred. Do you have any particular situations that stood out or any impactful moments from any of your talks?
I think certainly when I there's several for sure, but one that comes to mind is always when I talk to young student athletes and even just young students. The message really resonates deeply with them. I think they're at a critical point. They're teenagers or they're early adults, and they can relate to my son died because he got into a vehicle with someone that had been drinking, and the car was operated recklessly, and the driver was charged with reckless driving and driving under the influence, and she crashed and my son died. And so kids can, I think, can understand that. They all obviously partake in certain activities, and to understand the dangers of it, but more importantly, to understand what matters most in life, right? They're very confused a little bit, honestly, with what's going on in the world, where they're at, trying to find their position. They're going to college, or maybe they're going into the military or trade school, and then what's next, right? And they have their own set of fears. And so just kind of giving them that key foundational base so that they can take a step back and reflect and figure out what matters most in life. How do I overcome challenges and struggle and hardship? Because it's going to happen, and not get down when I fail. And because failure is just another step towards success. Ultimately, what I'm trying to get to them is to get them to really believe in themselves, bet on themselves, and understand that the quality of their mindset will architect the quality of their life. Mm.
Yeah.
And then the message is somewhat different for, you know, more senior, advanced adults, right? Like executives and whatever. But at the end of the day, it's really the same. And it's just applied to different situations. So, you know, we get so caught up in our world and we think we control a lot, but we don't control a lot. And I was instantly reminded of that on August 9th, 2020. You know, I had sent my son away to sports camps and sleepovers and friends' houses and, you know, you name it, on airplane trips to visit family. And he always came home. And then he didn't, you know. And I realized, I blame myself. I wasn't even there, Phil. And I blame myself at first, thinking I'm his father and I failed because I'm supposed to, my job is to love my family and provide and protect my family, most especially my children. And one of my kids didn't come home.
And I completely felt that, because as fathers, as husbands, we always feel like we got to fix everything.
Yeah.
We got to have a solution, right? Yeah. Your wife's talking to you about something, she's just trying to vent and you're trying to fix it, right?
Amen.
And so when you were talking about that, I see myself totally in that situation. How would I have fixed this? How would I have solved this? And taking the blame for that. How did you move past that?
It took about a month or so, but I moved past it when I realized I wasn't there. One, I couldn't do anything about it. That I had done everything right up until that point, and letting him go was the right decision. I entrusted the care of my son to another parent and expected that they would watch over my son as if they would watch over their own child. And she didn't. But it wasn't going to serve me to hold on to anger and rage. So, you know, ultimately, I just, I came to accept that we control so little, but what I do control is what I personally do and feel about what happens to me. I can't control what happens, but I can control what I do and feel.
And how it affects those around you that are still on this earth as well. And
yeah.
If you don't mind, because your son was a big part of this tragedy as well. And you even talk about in the book how often they're kind of left behind. Advice you have for parents. We have a situation where, you know, our son, our youngest is autistic. And so he gets a lot of attention from my wife and I.
Yeah.
And we always got to keep in the back of our head, well, we have our older son. We still gotta, you know, spend quality time with him and try to spend as much time as we can with him as well. And it's easy for the other one to get neglected in that situation. You talked a little bit on your book. Would you share some advice that you have for parents that even not such a tragedy, but, you know, where maybe some of their time and energy and focus has to go towards one child or one event?
Yeah. So, you're right. Liam was 11 when this happened, and, you know, and he lost his beloved older brother, and he was lost for a couple years. And, like any kid, he tried to hide it initially and soldier on. And they called it the siblings, decedents, forgotten grievers, because nobody wants to talk to an 11-year-old kid about grief, his grief, or how he's feeling, because the teachers or the coaches or the adults or family members don't want to ask for fear that it's going to cause him to cry, to suffer, doesn't want to relive the story. And 11-year-old peers are certainly not equipped to ask any questions regarding this subject. So they get forgotten. Instead, people would ask Liam, how are your parents doing? So no one was asking about him and how he was doing. So we made it a point, recognizing that we had to really check in with him, support him in every way possible. But to your point, I think Jake was the kid that always, he sucked a lot of the oxygen out of the room because he was such a big personality. And he was an extrovert, and Liam's an introvert. So I think it was an adjustment for Liam with Jake no longer being there. And all this space now available to him. But he's handled it really well. He's matured. He's 50. He's about to turn 16 in about 19 days. Wow. So similar to your son, getting ready to drive. But he's emotionally mature for his age. But yeah, it's a challenge. And I think like you said, you as parents, you just do your best because that's all you can do to help your kids where they need to be helped and meet them where they need to be met.
Well, great. If you had one message that you want to leave our audience with that kind of sums up your message that you talk about in your book, what would it be?
Each act of kindness creates a ripple, and the echoes of kindness are endless.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Stephen. Appreciate your time today. For our listeners who want to follow your work and insights, where can they find you online or connect with you?
Yeah, so I have a website. It's my name, Stephen with a PH, Panus, PANUS.com. All the information's there about how to get the book, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Target online. And there's information about the scholarships, speaking, and they can get in touch with me that way as well.
Awesome. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing your powerful story.
Thanks for having me, Phil. I appreciate it. And God bless you and your family.
Thank you. Thank you. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to another Success Is podcast. If Stephen's story inspired you, be sure to check out his book, Walk On. I promise you that you will be impressed and inspired by his book. It is a great message. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.